Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest, Erin Elizabeth. Her book, In the Limelight, My Healing Journey, is one of a great story about her figuring out how to regain her health after a number of serious assaults on it, including mold, Lyme's disease, all sorts of immune and endocrine problems. And she's here to tell her story. Thanks for joining us, Erin.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Kolb. Thank you. It's an honor to be here. So glad to be here.
So I learned a lot about you reading this story. I had no idea that you had such an interesting background. Would you like to share that with the audience?
Sure. Yes. It kind of started with started off with a bang, so to
yeah.
speak. But yeah. I'm adopted, and so my birth, I guess we can start at the beginning, but I'll make it quick. My birth mother, had a rough pregnancy, needless to say. So, in fact, my birth father was not there for her at all. They were both graduate students and at the time. And so, she actually, because of no support from him and being 1970, she went and had an abortion, but, somehow, I did make it through that procedure. So she was put under, and we don't know what happened, if it was a miracle or what kind of divine intervention happened, but I did survive that. And so then she did choose to place me for adoption, and we don't know if I was double vaccinated, but I was very sick. I was born very sick. So for 2 months was in an infirmary, finally, they decided that I was well enough to be adopted, and she also was trying to make a decision during those 2 months as well, but I was too sick to go home. And we don't know if I was vaccinated then, but it was then January 1971, 3 months after I was born in September, very cold, cold weather, winter. I had a bad cold. We're talking like Chicago weather, and my folks, just not knowing any better, took me to get me vaccinated, and then I had seizures. And had 104 fever for a week. They did a spinal tap, and then they were looking for encephalitis, which we think I had. So then I survived that, fortunately.
Well, you're lucky you didn't get autism. That's the if your fontanelles had been a little bit tighter, you might have gotten autism.
I really feel like I dodged a bullet, and I think that's why that it's the vaccine just. The whole movement is so near and dear to my heart because I truly believe that, yeah, it was just both those things in such a short amount of time, but especially the vaccinations, especially with a fever that high and for a week straight. And I don't know if they did Tylenol or not, but I think my mom, even though she had just adopted me, they still have, she was unable to have kids of her own to give birth, but she adopted my brother, and my parents are still married, and they adopted my brother. And in fact, you met her at your clinic back, I guess,
right.
In 2012 now. And so I think she knew, even just being a new mother for the first time, only having this baby for weeks, she knew in her heart that it had something to do with those vaccinations. And now, all these years later, we have talked about it, but I have no anger. In fact, the pediatrician was the one who shouldn't be giving vaccinations, especially when a baby has a severe cold and
really?
Older
yeah.
fine. So I'm very blessed. I then found my birth mother when I was 20 through a book that she'd written about giving me up and the whole ordeal for her. I think she felt there was a lot of, I don't want to say guilt, but I don't want to describe her feelings, but the book would indicate, it was a book actually that was dedicated to me, her firstborn, and she was unable to have other children, so I am her only born. And so she's an anthropologist, and she's travels the world, and I don't think she would have been able to do those things and help the many people
right.
she has. She's a PhD. If she had raised a child, plus my birth father, who I found admits he was not there for her at all, and being a single mother at that age would have been tough.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very fortunate. We are still close now that we've known each other over 25 years.
That's
great.
And
she's met my parents, and we're very lucky that it has a happy ending. But along the way, I endured a few more things as well. I usually don't go straight into it like that, but since you did ask,
I don't think that happens very often, that the fetus survives the abortion. I think that's pretty unusual.
Yeah, it really is. We just don't know, either that or I know she was very upset and crying, as I imagine, and I don't judge, as many women would who would be in that situation. So either it's a miracle either way, because either I did or either they put her under and said they skipped her that day. I mean, either way, it really is a miracle. But I think from what I know that they did something. So really it's just pretty shocking. So yeah, I'm blessed and do my best to remember that. So yeah, it's been the same year I met her. Our family home was I was 20, so it was kind of back and forth with college. Was destroyed by a tornado, and unfortunately, our cat, dog, and neighbors were killed. But they thought I was in the house, but I'd left minutes before it happened. Kind of an intuition thing again, I guess. Now that I say this out loud, divine intervention. And then, so I survived that. And, it was a wild year having found both my birth parents and then the twister. And they were in a newer home in a newer town. I didn't know, but I just had an inclination to leave. And, so after all those hurdles, then I actually had an accident, a bad ice skating accident in California, and they did a DTAP, not the DPT. It was the DPT that injured me at 3 months. So then at 26, I was not really up on my ice skating skills and fell pretty hard and had a couple, you cut yourself on the ice, so I'm in the emergency, and they gave me a DTAP, and I got somewhat sick after that, but recovered. But then I think what really the worst that I got was when I did get the implants. I don't know if I can say, is it better to leave out the brand that they put in, or is that okay to say? Or
well, I can say that we have more valve problems with one brand than the other. And probably 95% of our problems were with a particular implant. And we use the other implant when we use implants now, because it actually has a longer shelf life, not shelf life, but in the patient. People test better for that one, like 15 years rather than 10 years. So there's the advantage there that you don't have to change them out so often. The valves are very different. I mean, in the one brand, it's very flimsy, and the other brand is very sturdy. Anybody can take a look at that and... I had a valve expert from the Navy who wanted implants, and she looked at the valves and she commented what a poor design they were. So, you know, at least these valve experts don't think that aren't real impressed with the valves, especially in the implant that fails all the time. I wanted to point out, Elizabeth, you had that bad reaction to all those vaccines because you have a detoxification defect. You can't detox the mercury and aluminum in the vaccine.
Yes.
So when the implant shell starts to break down, even without the mold exposure, which we know you had, you would have gotten sick because of chemical toxicity.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Oh, yes. So and even within months, the first thing I noticed was that I was pretty slender. The whole reason I got them was I was not kind of smaller, not so busty, but in smaller breasts. But then I probably gained 30, 40 pounds, and I'm sure you've seen this with your patients within the first year and a half. I mean, at least gained 30 pounds. So, and not in a good way. A lot around the middle. My cortisol levels went up, and a lot, distended stomach, and then a lot around the, which I'd never had. I'd always had a small waist, but was gaining in that area. And I was so fortunate to have found you. And I actually called before, I don't even know if you know this, before my surgery, and I almost went to you, which probably would have prevented a lot of things when I
would have put in a different implant. That's true.
Oh, yeah.
But you might still have gotten mold. I mean, to be fair about it, the other implant that is with the better valve still can get mold on the outside. It doesn't get mold on the inside as much, but once you get mold on the outside of the implant, you're still pretty sick.
Well, I had my one and only, I wasn't even 40, and they sent me in. I had my one and only mastectomy not long after I had them too. Forgive me, mammogram. I don't know why I went there. Sorry, one and only mammogram. And so I always felt like maybe something happened in that mammogram too.
It's very possible. A rough mammogram will often cause a valve to become leaky. And not that the implant leaks, it doesn't. I mean, not it, like deflates,
right,
it doesn't.
Right.
But it somehow damages the valve, and then if there's mold on the outside, it can travel to the inside. And, of course, the ceiling on the inside can grow mold. And when we look at it, it's sometimes got – sometimes it's clear, sometimes it's got stuff floating in it. But usually if you keep your implants several weeks – 4 to 5 weeks, and mold will grow inside the implant, and that's pretty much proof that it was in there to begin with.
Yeah, that's what I think. So I was then, I knew when I tried everything else, and I'm sure you hear this from other patients, but like I thought, no, it's got to be this or this or this, and mm-hmm. I hadn't had them that long. I got them later at so I was 36 turning 37 in 2007,
right.
But by 2012 I knew I had to get them out and that I was going to go to you. And I think that I hadn't talked about it openly, but I was in a few groups on social media, and a couple of your patients wrote me, which really was helpful. And mm-hmm. so they've had good experiences, and that they made me just like now I will talk to people then who go to you and help them feel better. And I because of different walks of life where I run into these people, but there are a few women for your patients who, we're so happy and we're so much better, and it got me over that, because I guess there is kind of a fear. It's funny how there's more of a fear I see in taking them out than putting them in for women who have
this challenge. Well, there's the physical problems, because, of course, the implants do change the physical chest wall. The base is wider, and you got to decrease the base diameter and to make a breast. I mean, you're trying to form a breast. And, so it's that internal lift is important to do that. And then sometimes we go all the way around the nipple and take some skin out so that there's not so much rippling and wrinkling of the skin.
So I was very blessed. And then go figure, with all the weight I gained, actually, I was my biggest fear, I think, I remember when I woke up, I asked if I was in heaven, and you and my mom and Dr. Mercola was there, and the three of you, and I said, am I in heaven? And then I was so afraid there was nothing left. You know, that's just mental thing. And I had plenty left. I always tell people that you were, and my own OBGYN says that, you know, wow, that's a true artist. So, yeah, I'm very grateful that you put me, I would say you put me back together again. So I do appreciate that. And then, of course, not only that, but then the weight, it took a while. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen overnight. I mean, people.
No, it doesn't.
I felt better right away and was actually even able to like jog and things after weeks, but it took months before the weight, it didn't happen overnight, that it came on. I put that on, and not just the weight, but the so many of the challenges I was having. So it took a while. And then also I got a Lyme, no surprise, mm-hmm. which I see so many of the women with implants or getting the implants out that are having, the ones who are having problems like I was, that they have test positive for Lyme disease. So I did with a Western blot, positive, no doubt about it. I mean, so there was, we had a positive blood test.
Can I explain one thing at this point, before you go into the Lyme's, because I want people to understand that our clinic treats four different kinds of toxicities. Okay, there's chemical toxicity, which 30% of the population has a detoxification defect, like Erin does. She has an MTHFR. There's other ones, COMT. There's a whole list of them. But anyway, 30% of the population will have a detoxification defect, and they can't detox chemicals properly. And when the shell breaks down, especially if they have silicone, but even if they just have saline, they get chemical toxicity. Then silicone toxicity occurs in certain genetic types, and within a couple of weeks of getting implants, you'll start to develop autoimmune disease or any silicone exposure, even fabric softener and skincare products. So you don't have to get autoimmune from silicone. You don't have to have implants to get that. And then there's biotoxicity, which is really fibromyalgia symptoms. You get very tired and nauseated, your entire endocrine system's wiped out, your immune system's wiped out, and you get a lot of neurological symptoms. And that's with the mold. And most saline patients have that, and some silicone. And then there's heavy metal toxicity because of a pre-existing detoxification defect. So all of those toxicities have to be treated. But then we have the co-infections. We have bacteria, which cause pain, and a lot of people just have painful hard breaths, and there's bacteria that grow out. Then we have viruses, especially HHV6 and Epstein-Barr and CMV, and if you don't treat those, you still have immune problems, and you have the fatigue that goes along with it. And then you have to treat the fungus, which is the yeast and the mold. The yeast is fatigue, muscle ache, mental clouding. It's more in the gut. It can be in the sinuses. The mold's usually in the sinuses and in the chest wall, sometimes in the gut. So you have to treat that. And you can't just give 1 month of antifungals. You actually have to give several months of rotating antifungals. And we use muscle testing to determine that because, of course, it takes 12 weeks to grow mold out. And by then, hopefully, I've gotten control of the mold. So we can't wait on the lab results for that. And then the worst one is what you had, intracellular infections. Intracellular infections are either spirochetes or mycoplasma. Now, let me give you the list of intracellular infections. Most neurodegenerative diseases are spirochetes. That includes MS. That includes ALS. IC is actually a spirochete, interstitial cystitis. Half of rheumatoid arthritis is a spirochete. The other half is an intracellular mycoplasma. And then there's a weaponized mycoplasma that caused the Gulf War syndrome that is very bad with neurological disease. And that's really the basis of our biological warfare program. So anybody that does research in intracellular infection doesn't just lose their medical license. Usually they actually have several assassination attempts. So, you know, that's something that doctors aren't taught about. So why was it so important for Erin to get her implants out? It was because Lyme-literate doctors all over the country have found, and they've written to me about it, that if the woman has breast implants and an intracellular infection, she's not going to recover until her breast implants come out. And the doctors are figuring this out, and it's usually because of these toxicities that affect the T-cell immunity. And the dangerous thing, Erin, is that T-cell immunity is also responsible for fighting cancer. So there you have a much higher rate of cancer in women with silicone implants, especially silicone because of all those chemical carcinogens. And then you have an increased risk in textured implants of an atypical lymphoma that is caused by mold biotoxins combined with chemical toxicity. And we see it only in textured, but it is important if you have textured to get your entire capsule out and any enlarged lymph nodes out. So, you know, so that's the disease you're dealing with. And as you say in your book, you cannot treat my patients anyway, and you're one of my patients, with long-term antibiotics because the yeast overgrowth is so severe that they can't get out of bed. So we have to use Cowden's protocol. I usually combine Cowden's with Overman's protocol and add a couple of things of my own with electricity and frequency things. And we've been treating intracellular infections without antibiotics.
Wow. Yeah, see, it's amazing. Yeah, and I'm fortunate to know Dr. Cowden, too, and he's, and I never did get to meet Dr. Overman, but I know he passed just after I was, you know, just after my surgery with you. I believe.
Yeah, that's the danger of curing cancer. You might pass early.
Yeah.
As you know very well.
We just have another one I'm writing about today. That he was a sole passenger in a bus. I don't know why he was riding a bus, but he went off a cliff. So it was a sick dog. This one in New Zealand. Usually they're in the U.S. But yeah. So thank you. I really appreciate that explanation. I was thinking I should take notes, but I know I'll get to hear this show back again.
you can hear it back. That's
because,
right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, tell us about your Lyme journey, because that was very important in your recovery.
Oh, yeah. I would say that the first step, of course, was getting the implants out. But then after that, which was a huge, huge step, and then the healing process began. And I think it was almost a year. Everything happens in it was in May. I think I had them out in May. And then it was a year later that I found out about the Lyme. I felt better, but I still was in a little bit, a little bit better with the gut, and definitely things were healing. But once I got the Lyme diagnosis and was able to work with a little bit with Lee Cowden, Dr. Cowden didn't know him as well back then. Mm-hmm. And then Dietrich Klingart, who had treated me before and they'd been very helpful as well. And so I just, we kind of like you combined a couple different, get different opinions, and I'm fortunate to have all these, you know, experts and like yourself, and everyone has a little bit of a different opinion. So like kind of combine the program, and I do talk about my, no antibiotics. I just felt that for people who I knew who had done the long-term antibiotics with Lyme, that so often, if it had been chronic Lyme, I mean, maybe if they just got fit, I understand that you want to do, that makes sense to do, I would think, and I'm not a doctor, but to do course of antibiotics. But since mine had been such a long time, chronic now, that I realized even symptoms before the implants too, I did the protocol, a lot of the Cowden protocol, and actually it's a little crazy, and I don't recommend this to anyone, but I think I went from about, and I'm 5'10", but I think I went from a size, you know, 14, and I always say to people, size 14 is, that can be awesome for most folks, but I am this very small.
You have
bones.
Small bones. Yes,
yeah,
you do.
My rib cage is so.
So you were, you had a lot of fat when you were at size 14.
It wasn't large bones.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we did DEXA. I mean, we did a fat caliper and all that. I even did a DEXA, two different DEXA body scans, and one I was. Mm-hmm. And I know DEXA is a little different, but well over 50%. Right, I had no muscle tone, and I think that's. I've always been, because I'm hypermobile, lanky, 5'10". I've always had trouble building muscle tone like some other body types. But, yeah, I was just so much, it was just that extra fat. And that came off once I got the Lyme diagnosis, got the implants out, and was on the way to healing journey. That, and especially around the middle where, I mean, I'm like a 20, I'm pretty slender, just naturally, 26-inch waist. I'm a ectomorph, very lanky, slender build. Mm-hmm. But I was definitely well into the 30-something inch waist, which just didn't fit my body. In fact, people would ask if I was, and not often, but, you know, even family, I would ask something, are you pregnant? Because I was just, my stomach was so big. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that all
bloated.
Bloated. But all of that weight, it came off in under 90 days. So that was, and at that point, it was, I mean, I just have pictures where, a couple, thankfully, that I put up on social media, and I didn't do much, but just a few right in between. I'm glad I took a few as it was changing, because it was just, whoa, how dramatic and how much better I felt as well, and doing the program. But I did a simplified, not all the, you know, like all the drops, that, like I know some people do every single the herb or tincture, and I kind of did a little bit more simplified, and also was changed my diet as well. I mean, I think I was eating clean, but I lost so many of those cravings too, and that changed, I think, even after when the implants were out. I don't know why, but when the implants were in and I felt sick, and it, like you said, definitely, I think, had the heavy metal toxicity, but also the intercellular and the mold. I just was hungry all the time, you know, leaky gut, so was so hungry all the time. Gaining. So then I felt better. I could still eat, but healthier foods, and I didn't have the cravings for like the bread and the carbs and sugar all day. Not that I think that people shouldn't have carbs or they can't have sugar, but I just was everything. Yeah, it was a really like kind of an overnight shift for me. So that was
Once
really
you get
great.
Rid of the yeast, the cravings do go away. That's good.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I knew I couldn't have done that with the implants. Then I don't even think, like, there were days where I didn't feel I could get out of bed with the implants. Mm-hmm. And like you said, so that made a huge difference. And it what I realize now too, because I even went out to Lee's place. I did have an accident while traveling in Nashville, so I had fractures in my shoulder and I haven't updated the book with that. Tore the labor in my shoulder, and I realized, being lanky and my body type, that I do have to be careful. I don't have osteoporosis or anything, but I just am just that lanky, hypermobile type that can get a little more easily injured than some. And so I had a little bit of a setback, which I talked about openly. But when I had gone out and I'm very fortunate to have the access to get out to Dr. Cowden's clinic. I mean, I didn't, just where I would go in like for a few hours each day while I was out. staying in Dallas, and like they all said there, you know, with Lyme or sometimes with these autoimmune things, it can be lifelong. I think after I felt was quote unquote better, I just you fall into a little bit of old routines, but I never gained the weight back, and I so that was good. Not that the weight is the most important thing by any means, but it was, I think I woke up with, when I had those implants in, and this immediately stopped after they were out, I woke up with the most sour stomach. That was one of my worst symptoms of all, the most sour, sour stomach. I don't know other way to explain it, for probably 2 years or something, up until that, like those, it was getting worse and worse, to the point I could still eat though, but because I still have cravings, but that I think immediately vanished when the implants came out. So yeah, so I know now that I still have to, just like anything in life, maintain. I'm having a little green drink now, watching my diet, and doing my best just to, less stress. And but yeah, I just very appreciative to you, and I know I don't get to say it often. So just finding you. So yeah, thank you.
Well, I want to explain to people about why Lyme's tests are sometimes negative. I found out some very interesting stuff. You know, we do a lot of muscle testing here. And so for, I guess, the last couple of years, almost everybody who has Lyme's also has something that was called an unknown spirochete, but it traveled with Lyme's. And sometimes they'd have Bartonella or Babesia, and I could recognize those and treat them. That wasn't too hard, but the unknown spirochete was very, very prevalent. And so what you've got is two spirochetes, both of which mutate a lot. And so you have to keep switching treatments. And I think if you think back on your time with Cowden and Kleinhardt, you'll see that they switch treatments a lot. You know, every few months, your whole protocol would change. Because if you don't, the spirochete will, you know, bury itself in and get resistant to the treatment you're on and start propagating itself again. But it was very interesting because on the Internet, I found out that they actually discovered the unknown spirochete. And the unknown spirochete was named Borrelia mitometria. So they've actually discovered it. And when I muscle test as to why people have Lyme's, it's not usually the tick bite. I mean, sometimes, like I think you had a tick bite, and certainly that can happen.
But
the majority of my patients got their spirochete and or even their mycoplasma from their pets, cats and dogs.
Yeah,
so if you have breast implants, or if you have an immune deficit, or if you have a mold exposure, don't let your dogs kiss you or your cats lick you, because your partner may not get sick because he or she may have a good immune system, but you don't, and so you get quite ill. And it's intracellular infections are some of the hardest things to treat of all the co-infections that we see with breast implants.
Wow. See, yeah, then I think with the animals, though, I fit that to a T with the dogs and cats. They lived, in fact, when I saw you, I still had both, and they were like, they lived in 19 and 20, the two cats, but they were indoor, outdoor. So, yep, I think is definitely a factor.
I know your website's down, but would you like to give your contact information to the listening audience?
Oh yes, and I don't know. Are we on live today? Are we on live or
well, this is a pre-record.
Okay, got it.
Yeah,
sorry.
So maybe it'll be up by the time it plays.
Yeah, it could be. Oh yes, sorry. Yeah, I didn't know we should say.
Plays on the 22nd of July.
Oh yeah, we're just down for like an hour. Health sites, a bunch of the health sites went down on this big track that we all host with the same person. Even Alex Jones hosts with them, but his stayed up. I think he's got like his own whole room of servers. But yes, it's health, of course, it's healthnutnews.com. Mm-hmm. And if you go there or healthnutnews.com/join, then it will, we'll be, whenever everybody hears this very soon, it will, it'll be up and running and very fast. And there they can get the book for free. I've never charged for it. And it's not, you know, it's not like a long novel, but it's, so it does, but it is, almost 50 pages, so you've got some good information in there. And it is my story, and I kind of go through the protocol that I did. So yeah, healthnutsnews.com, kind of a funny name. And when I started it, I thought it would be more lighthearted, and health nut news, that I'd be writing more organic recipes and maybe a little bit controversial. But it's a little more serious. Become a little more serious.
Well, you're doing very serious work. Erin writes about the untimely deaths of holistic doctors that are either curing cancer or have found a link between the Nagalase and the vaccines and then increased risk of cancer in the population. Of course, that's something that we're not supposed to talk about. So, but anyway,
right.
But she's done
a
lot of research on that, and it's up on her website. It's well worth reading.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, there's probably even though we're only 65 or 60-something deaths, there are follow-up articles, because now some are actually being investigated not only by the families but by authorities. There's one, Dr. Marshall, where they did open an official investigation into the medical examiner's office, who said, it was an accident. I knew it wasn't an accident when we said it. And so there are well over 100 articles in there. I know a lot of people go down the rabbit hole, but it's all on the site, and it's all free, including the book at Health Nut News, so they can get all that. The newsletter updates, where they'll hear it, I get the information out. Sometimes my newsletters have 20-something stories, because I write a lot. A lot of information.
Well, it's all good information. And if people are interested in additional studies of these clusters of deaths, I found the best information on Foster Gamble's website. He talks about the microbiology deaths in the 80s. He talks about the about 6,000 people that he believes were killed when they hack into computers, onboard computers, in cars that are newer than 2006, and push down on the gas, disable the airbags and the brakes, and cause them to run off the road and die or be injured. He talks about the various different groups that have clustered, and many of the people that are killed in these groups, and they have inadequate medical examination done. It's kind of like the Kennedy stuff. A lot of people were deemed suicide when they shot themselves in the back of the head, that kind of real stupid stuff. So.
Oh, yeah. And we have collaborated. Dr. Mercola and I did an interview with Foster and his wife. They interviewed us, actually, for like an hour or two. And we've talked. And, yeah, he's a great resource as well, because he kind of ties it where I might have more. And I know he has a lot on the doctors as well, and has put some of mine up there. But he's great. But he, like you said, I haven't even delved into like the microbiologists, and so he's he's really putting some of those pieces together, which is why I'm glad that we know each other now to talk and to compare information. So
Well, the microbiologist actually had to do with the weaponized mycoplasma that we were talking about earlier. It was very dangerous to be an ethical microbiologist, because if you didn't want to play ball with the studies they were doing, or if you tried to whistleblow, you often ended up dead. So that was the weaponized mycoplasma that Dr. Garth Nicholson brought out. And I've interviewed Dr. Nicholson many times on this radio show. The one that figured out that most of the neurodegenerative diseases are intracellular spirochetes or other intracellular infections. So he's been a great resource for us clinicians that are trying to treat these mystery diseases.
Oh, that's great. That's good for him. Oh, that's awesome. We talk about other things on the site, not just we'll do recipes from holistic doctors or recipes, and we're talking a lot about the spraying, and I've even gotten in, of course, to what I believe with geoengineering, but also not just in Florida. People think it's only in Florida. I don't know if they do it in Georgia, but aerial spraying, which I think they're doing tonight with NALID. So, we can't get away from that either, which isn't it crazy that it's Dibrum is the name brand, which is morbid spelled backwards, but Zika's not even an even the World Health Organization admits, hey, Zika's not an epidemic anymore. If it ever was, it wasn't, but yet we're still spring, and I see PBS is gearing up for, when I was PBS, or I don't want to say that. I can't remember if it's them for certain. I felt like it was public television, but several of the stations are, Discovery too, gearing up for these huge shows that are talking about the mosquitoes, how dangerous mosquitoes
right.
are. So that it's interesting what people are seeing out there in mainstream, and then they're scared to death and say, I don't care. Spray it all with poison. Kill those mosquitoes. Like it's
right.
I don't. And not that I'm saying, I don't know your opinion on it. Not like I particularly want to be bit by them or think that it's dangerous. But I think that the birth defects, as they showed, are probably caused by the spray. As scientists are now saying, even CNN, I couldn't believe it, did an article said, wow, hey, shocker. After I've written about this for 3.5 years. On the site, mm-hmm. the spray actually may cause birth defects.
There was a pretty good scientific article on that, actually. When this was happening in another country, the doctors there did a study, and that they showed that the birth defects were from the chemical being used to spray the mosquito rather than the West Nile or whatever
the disease.
Probably. And actually, it was a scientific article that, there's so much in the scientific literature, and of course, it's just buried. Nobody ever knows about it because people don't read these journals. But the studies are pretty good. And they did studies on the how many babies had the virus, and it was a small percentage, so it couldn't. Just with Koch's postulates, you can't say that the virus caused the microcephaly because all the women were exposed to the tainted water, but only I can't remember exactly, but it was well less than 50% of the babies had the virus. So that just didn't hold up scientifically that it was a virus. So
it is interesting,
but again, it gets buried, and the powers that be put on the mainstream media what they want to be this week's crisis, and the facts
always,
be damned,
Well, and our governor, and since I'm in their neighbor in neighboring state of Florida, our governor mm-hmm. Rick Scott, I couldn't believe USA Today was posting his stories like it was. Like this was fact about all about the Zika and for our children and our babies. We must get more money for the Zika epidemic. Of course, the vaccines. And so, it's frightening. So people read that and they trust the mainstream, although at least that's getting a little bit better, where I think because of the internet and many reasons, I think people are becoming more open-minded and listening to shows like yours and hopefully looking at alternative health sites and alternative sites in general. I mean, it's funny that we have to call it alternative media when it's really the media telling the truth.
Right. Not at all. And, you have to look at motive behind this. What we were told in session was that the motive behind this, all this West Nile thing, was to try to get people to be abstinent from sex in Catholic countries, you see, because they were worried that they were going to have microcephalic babies. So it really is a depopulation agenda.
Oh, I would believe that, yeah.
See,
I would believe
you can tie it all in. There's always something that ties it in. The shooting in the Fort Lauderdale airport, there was a bill in front of the Florida legislature on gun control at that time.
I thought so. Yeah, I know we did a story on
Right. So it's never, you got to connect the dots, as they say. You have to see the big picture, and then you can see what's going on. But they certainly don't want people to connect the dots when it comes to cancer and vaccines. That's a no-no.
Oh yeah. Even though, like you said, the studies are out there, even the CDC, I was actually reading the CDC site, and it was two things about the polio, of course, polio vaccine and SV, now I'll forget the name, but the polio vaccine that it could potentially cause, have caused cancer, but also...
Lymphoma, actually.
What's that?
Lymphoma.
Yeah, lymphoma. Mm-hmm. but also that it was saying that, yes, measles could prevent, but I unfortunately was right in 70. I almost would have had the measles born a little sooner, but I didn't. I got MMR. I think it was out because probably like wouldn't have been until 72. I was born late 70. And so by the time they did MMR, but yeah, it's unfortunate that, yeah, measles, I mean, I see it when the people have the healthier immune system if they've had measles or, it's so funny now. I see people writing and they say they're absolutely terrified. You know, oh my gosh, I'm so terrified. Even though they don't vaccinate, they're just like, I'm so afraid of measles. Oh my gosh, I'm afraid my baby's going to die. And they don't understand that so often, like, because I have all those parents, birth parents, I've quizzed all of them. And they said, oh, the chickenpox was way worse than the measles. all four of them, since I know them all, they say, oh yeah, the measles was a breeze, but the chickenpox was so itchy. And so I don't know for you, did you have measles?
I had measles, mumps, chicken pox, and to tell you the truth, because I have a detoxification defect, I think I'm more COMT than I'm not MTHFR, but I really should never have gotten vaccines. I mean, they really don't do well with me. And I know because I was in the military and I had to take a whole bunch of vaccines all at once and I got deathly ill. So it's chemical toxicity is what it is. It's mercury and aluminum and other the metals that we can't get rid of, and we get sick. You know, it's just problems to it.
Especially with the military, like you were talking about, too.
You have to do it. Yeah, you can't not do your shots. So, but that's how I learned. I was, because I was born in 1954, so we did not really have the number of vaccines that you had in 71. I don't think I got sick at all from the normal vaccination schedules because it wasn't. A problem for me because I didn't have so many of them before the age of three, you know.
But now it's even worse.
Yeah.
but it was the vaccinations in the military, because I know you started out. I remember you telling us sometime when I've seen you in person, we were chatting about you started out in the you started out as a surgeon in the military, wasn't it?
Or was it? Right. They paid for medical school, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, the military was great. Let me tell you something. I was in 13 years, and the other day when I was driving back from South Carolina, I decided to research, veterans, because veterans get a lot of benefits, and I found out I'm actually a veteran because we had a war called Grenada. So 13 years, we only had one war. It was over in about 3 days. So I'm actually a veteran, so I get all these benefits. It's hilarious. I never knew I was a veteran. I mean, I'd been out for many years. I thought, well, there really wasn't a war, but there was a war. So.
Wow.
Isn't that funny?
I didn't realize how that works. I guess I thought my dad.
Yeah, just because you're in the military doesn't make you a veteran. They actually have to have a war during your term of active service. Well, now it's not a problem. We've been in constant war, but, back then, that was between Vietnam and Desert Storm. Desert Storm, I got out in 88, and Desert Storm, I think, was 88 or 89, so.
Right, the first one.
I wasn't in there,
Oh, that's good you weren't, because so many people are sick.
I never got those vaccines. Now, let me tell you something interesting. We had our shot records. We kept our shot records. Each troop in the military kept their own shot records, but after they did that thing with the squalene in the vaccines, it was such a bad adjuvant, they confiscated and then conveniently lost 60,000 vaccination records.
Oh my God.
You gotta laugh. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You lost them? They were up to something that they shouldn't have been up to, because all of a sudden you couldn't have your vaccination records. These are little details that you learn when you interview all the experts on all these conspiracy theories, but they're not quite theories. They're actually pretty real,
You probably retain so much of that too, because you get to interview everyone. And
I do. We used to have a saying that if the government hadn't tried to kill you at least four times, you don't have anything important to say.
So. I like that. Oh my gosh. Pretty true. Wow. It's remarkable. No, you have some great guests. There's still shows backlog that I want to listen to. And what I love about it, as opposed to video, in some ways it's easier too, because to do the show, but also to listen to them. I think people now more, I notice, are preferring, a lot of people prefer the podcast, the audio, because they can multitask.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Oh, sure, yes. So the site is healthnutnews.com, just like you're a health nut, no spaces or dashes, healthnutnews.com. And then there's, if you're on your phone, there's a little green bar, or if you scroll down, there's a zillion places where you can just put your email in to get, and you'll download immediately. My book will be, you'll be able to be sent, my ebook is downloaded to your email. And then I do not as much as I should, you know, occasional updates, but it's not a daily thing. I'm just lucky if I get 3 or 4 out a month with the updates. But I really, if I have a breaking story, then I do my best to get it out immediately. And it's, so, yes, that's the information.
I think it's very helpful for anybody who is chronically ill and doesn't know the cause, because we want to emphasize that mainstream medicine doctors will put you on Prozac or other SSRI inhibitors or Xanax or whatever and tell you it's everything but what it is. Fibromyalgia is not an unknown cause. Fibromyalgia is either yeast or mold biotoxins or usually mycoplasma intracellular infection, and it's very treatable. And the treatment isn't some pharmaceutical drug that hides the symptoms like Lyrica. It actually is treating the cause of the disease. And I know Dr. Mercola has been singing this for years. You've got to treat the cause of the disease, not just cover up the symptoms.
Yes. Oh, yes. So true. And speaking of SSRI, they put me on Prozac after that tornado, but not because of stress or anything, but because I had had, and I found out it was hereditary when I found my birth parents, trichotillomania. So, and you, I don't know if you saw that, but if I mentioned it. So, but yeah, then I quit, which I would never, ever recommend anybody to do, but I didn't know. I quit cold turkey, but I did hypnotherapy, and in one session, and I'm still friends with her 20-something years later from California, she hypnotized me. I didn't, of course, the doctor, when he put me on this stuff, I said, I remember that day, I said, couldn't I maybe be hypnotized to stop with the eyelash pulling, which also my aunt did, my first cousins, all these people I found, they all did the same thing. And strawberry blonde, same coloring as me. It was really weird. But he said, oh, no, you're type A like me. It won't work, you know. So that was a bunch of BS, because it worked amazingly.
It was fine,
and then it was like a half hour, you're really, really under. And I said, well, nothing happened there. No time went by. And she goes, actually, look at the clock. And I have been under half hour, and I never pulled again. So I quit the Prozac. So, yeah, people, you're right, finding that worked for me. But I know I got off on a tangent. But, and I'm sure the Prozac being on it, being that it's, you know, has the fluoride and being on that, it took me about 5 years from the tornado to 5 years later to get hip on that and to get off of that. But yes, so many people, like you said, just take more and more pharmaceuticals to exactly cover up the symptoms instead of getting to the cause.
I interviewed Dr. Amin on his book, Healing Anxiety and Depression, and I felt like his research was really important. He did spectra brain scans and characterized, I think, 7 different kinds of problems. And that he found that teenagers that were put on Prozac, they had temporal lobe problems, and they were more likely to commit suicide. So, you know, you can't treat just the depression symptom with one drug, because the depression symptoms may be 7 different types of diseases physiologically. And so, you know, you don't give teenagers Prozac, because then they can commit suicide. You know, that's just
And I was lucky that I did, you know, something like that didn't happen, or I didn't feel tempted to do so. And I was 20, but 21, but still, I'm sure, and especially at that age, it was ridiculous. And especially since it wasn't, even with the tornado, everything, there was no depression. It was because actually I felt depressed on the Prozac. I think that made me feel. It was not fun, and it. Yeah, I just remember that for those years it was very difficult being on it. But yeah, I just definitely knew that there was another fix. Oh, and it was only for a nervous disorder, trichotillomania, which they say, oh yeah, because it's in the obsessive compulsive family or whatever, so it'll help. Oh, and it didn't help. That's the thing. I didn't stop pulling the eyelashes.
Right.
Luckily, I wasn't one to pull my hair. And I went once to a meeting at the university. I was in the middle, Indiana University in the Midwest. There were like 40 people there who had it. I mean, this is pretty prevalent.
Yeah.
And a lot of women wore headscarves, or the guys didn't mind so much, but the women would wear scarves who pulled out all the hair on their head, and they're men. But yeah, the Prozac didn't even help. But I wish back then when I was going to those meetings, I could have told them about something like, hypnotherapy. So that is strange that our brains are, amazing things. And my hypnotherapist does brain mapping too. So she didn't.
Well, that's really the next great frontier, though, is to discover the true cause of schizophrenia, obsessive compulsive disorder, and bipolar disease, because we don't have the big picture at all there. We don't. And I'm going to tell you something. I think it's multidimensional. I'm positive it's multidimensional, and that we can never solve those puzzles just in three dimensions. There's fourth dimensional influences in many of those patients.
Yeah, that makes sense. I believe it.
Yeah.
Gives me
so anyway. Well, we are coming up on the end of our hour. Thanks very much for joining us. It's been delightful, and I really enjoyed your book. I learned a lot about your incredible journey, starting out with the miracle that happened, and all of the things along the way. And I think you need to get some sort of an analysis, though, about why you are in so many hurricanes and tornadoes. You seem to have more than your share of that. Do you have any idea why that might be?
Doc, I wish I could figure that out. We're still, as I was saying beforehand, I'm on the cell, we're still a week back from getting in the house. We had a Hurricane Matthew that was almost a direct hit. And, I did move to Florida, but it happened before that, even I'm in the Midwest. So I would like to work that out. Yeah, I feel like it's probably maybe that fourth, dimensional. I don't know why. It seems like, and I'm I seem to be fortunate so far, but that does take a toll on you, all this stress. So,
it's very stressful.
Yeah.
But, there is something about the energy field of people who are hit by lightning like seven times. You know that, right? When they study their energy fields, they're very similar, and they attract lightning. You know, I guess you probably know the author of, Into the Light. You know, he was struck, seven times with lightning?
Yes, I remember.
And cannot be. One of my friends also stuck seven times with lightning, and both of them can't be around computer equipment. If they pick up a cell phone, they could break it. You know, their electromagnetic fields are very, very different. And so the question is, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Did the seven strikes change the energy field, or did the energy field attract the seven lightning strikes? But I have a feeling it's the latter. And so I was just thinking maybe there's something about bad weather patterns that your energy field attracts. It's certainly possible.
I was mad the other day. Something was happening with the computer, and I got angry, and literally the storm just was brewing outside.
Interesting.
That are not
very,
you know,
very
really
interesting.
Close.
We'll have to get more information about that.
Yeah. I think there's I think you're onto something, and
I
wondered. I wanted to clear that field to figure it out.
I'll ask about it and see if I can get any more information. So.
Thank you.
Well, it's great talking with you again, Erin.
You too. Thank you. No, it was a pleasure. As it flies by when your time flies, when you're having.
Yeah, it does. It does. Keep up the good work. You're doing very important work, and
vice versa. Thank you for all you do, and I know. Thank you. But and also for being your personal patient, I can't help but say just thank you for me, and I know from so many women who have. Come before me or after me that have gone to you that are so happy. So we're very grateful.
Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb. We've been interviewing Erin Elizabeth on her book, In the Limelight, My Healing Journey. Next week, we will be interviewing Dr. David Lowe, The Study of Dreams. Please join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.